on Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond.
Hello, this is, it's January, yes, it's 2015, yes, and it's the 18th. Oh, happy birthday, Al. Anyway, it's 18th of January. Tonight I have no guest, unless you want to come on, in which case you will be the guest. I've had a very kind of, what we call a hibernatory, a winter. I'm in bear. Frack off! It's January. Kind of. It's been very cold and very rainy and very miserable and it's not such a brilliant weather. So we've been. Very many of my friends and I are doing exactly the same thing, which is like. Spending all day in bed for a week, you know. Some people even have an excuse because they've made themselves ill so that they can do it. But other people have just taken off. And part of the things that I'm involved in is what I call spontaneous reality, which is essentially that if something comes up, you've got the time and space to deal with it. For instance, if I had a steady 9-to-5 job, I certainly would not be able to do anything like what I do here with the radio or anything like that, mainly because the radio is at night and I'd be working the day and I wouldn't I'd be dead in a few weeks. So having a break every so often, and particularly in the winter time is, it's a time of introversion, introspection. We review the last year. Certainly some things that we've been doing and talking about recently on the show is, you know, rather than think about rather than have New Year's resolutions. Oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. No, more in the this is how reality is going to be. This is, I want to feel this way. I want to feel this happiness. I want to feel this achievement. And we're getting round to doing what they call the manifestation, the secret, the laws of manifestation, the laws of attraction, they call it. Which is essentially being able to speak to the universe in its language, which is the language of feeling. So, to that end, if anybody would like to call in, and we'll talk about what your feelings for the next year want to be. I'm also open to ray readings. If anybody who's listening has never had their rays read, it's a fascinating thing. I'll tell you all about yourself, things that you don't even tell yourself. So, very sugar-free readings. We have now. I'm just going to check on the chat room. I'm going to chat on the chat room. I can't be there all the time because it tends to make my computer crash when I'm on it, which makes it difficult to hear this. Hello, everybody. All there. Okay. Yes. Hi, all. Right. So you'll just see how long it takes to hear that. I've just typed in hi, all. So you should. I would be very happy to speak to people this afternoon. This is a moment, a very intense moment. Look at what's going on in the world. the powers that be are still trying to kick the can down the road. They're still trying to create a world war, and we're all starting to see, you know, war is just their business. It's their business plan, and money is part of the business plan, and it's all a business. There's no governments. There's only corporations. There's no countries. In fact, not only the what we think of as a land or a country is a corporation, but people too are corporations. Now, those of you who've been following the Santos, Bonacci, Kate of Gaia, Robert Menard kind of line of thinking, you know, what people call the sovereign freedom movement, they're definitely on the way to working out what really is the truth. And the truth is that we're free. And that it's basically somebody has moved into your house and started bossing you around, essentially. And if you take that, then you're behaving in the way... now, it may be because the reason that you're taking that is because you've been so traumatized previously that it's just an easy thing. They just work on the traumatic sockets that have been installed, and you just follow along and do what you're told because you're a good citizen. Because everybody wants to be a good citizen, don't they? Nobody wants to be a bad citizen. What does it mean? You know, what does it mean to be a good citizen? Does it mean you follow the government's rule, or does it mean that you're good with the people? Well, I think a citizen is somebody who lives in a city, and a city is a very odd place that is, again, it's really, I suppose one way of looking at it is, you know, everybody has the understanding of a university campus, you know. So London University, where I used to work, didn't really have a campus because it was like there were colleges dotted all over Bloomsbury, and there were other things that were going on, other colleges, other businesses, residential and all that sort of stuff, libraries. So what is the University of London? Yeah, what is the University of Cambridge? It's not in one place. It's dotted around. So it really is conceptually the corporation that it is, rather than a place. So you could also look at, say, the City of London, which is itself a corporation campus. Even the Queen needs to ask permission to go in there because it's not her land. It's a different place. It's not England. Bizarrely enough, most people know this kind of stuff by now. We've been learning this over the last 3, 4, 5 years. We're not who we think we are. Well, we're not certainly who we've been told to think that we are. So, yes, be a good slave. Hello, everybody. Oh, it's great to see a good, healthy little chat room this evening. Like I said, I'm going to put the chat numbers in the dial-in numbers because we have a number in Britain, and I can see there's a couple of people in Britain. So I'm going to put in the number 0141-356-4141. What a fantastic number. Nobody ever calls it. Please call it in. Come straight into the studio here. That's the Britain number. And in America, the United States of, or Vespuccia, which is Sean's way of putting it, because it was Amerigo Vespucci who originally discovered America rather than Columbus. And why do they call it Columbus Land? Columbia. Oh, they do. All right. Hi, Nim. Let me just type this in. So in America, it's 775-773-3431. And... It is a Skype number. So, yes, when you come in, you come straight into the studio. So, be aware. If I've got a conversation going on, if you could mute your mic until I call out your area code or your name if you're coming in over Skype. There is a Skype I don't know if you can call Skype without making a making a connection first, but you can call Wall Spirit Radio on Skype. I'm not sure if it actually works so easily, because you'd have to connect with me, and it's on another computer. I suppose I could get the laptop running. So if anybody wants to join, yeah, just call. Just call. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Actually, if you want, I can call you back. So if you've got no money or you haven't got the international credit, let me know and I'll call you back. That's how desperate we are. We want to talk to you. Yeah, I love talking to the audience, and I'll talk, because it's not really an audience. It's like a gathering of friends. It's like a gathering around a campfire. You know, everybody's got their dog sitting next to them, and you know, they're all playing nicely and gnawing away at bones while people tell stories. And this is why we listen. We listen for the stories. I see. Yeah. So when we have a change of year, there's always a lot. I mean, so much time gets wasted. Oh God, don't get me started about wasting time on celebrations and all of that stuff. I don't have time to celebrate myself. I feel my time has been really pinched a lot since the last 6 months. Oh, very nice, writing there. We ought to call it Runeland, for did not the Vikings find it? Who knows, anyway. Yes, that's true. Oh, really? So I'm just gonna get the chat there into there so that he can see that. That's good. So I'd like to welcome everybody on what's it called? Oh yes, Scottish Sovereigns on the Land .ning.co.uk. Quite a mouthful, but you can also hear it on wallspiritradio.com and Ever Beyond Radio. Do come to Ever Beyond Radio, by the way. I've got some really cool things that are for sale. Lovely little shungite pendants. Those are ones that are factory cut. So I've got like triangles and circles that are really nice and really cool. Lovely little polished pendants. And I've also got some torsion systems. Those are circles and hexagons, which create these geometric fields. Excuse me. Oh. Yeah, I'm so bored. Freeman, the Simpson agendas. Not on this show. This is not a show. We don't talk much about Freeman and ideologies and things like that, because it's not spiritual enough, really. The spiritual aspect of it is the fact that we are free. The rest of it is just words. It's just people trying to cast spells. To be honest, law is a magical process. It's black magic. That's why they call it the Black Dictionary. Black's Dictionary. If you're an agent yourself, just say so and I won't waste my time ringing in. Well, don't waste your time. There we go. And if anybody is come here to cause trouble, we have a series of highly trained wolf dogs who will instantly chuck you from the chat room as soon as you're nasty. So we do ask and advise people to play nice. You know, we want people to feel safe, and in order for people to feel safe, we have to make sure that we have enough protection from safety. So if people are getting unpleasant, they will go. That's just the warning. Not very mentioned, not very tolerant of people messing about. And, you know, we're here for free, all right? There are people who do these things that aren't paid by governments or anything like that. We do this because we're obsessed by truth, And if you want the truth, then come here. But we are not interested in debating and also denigrating. We don't discuss other people's shows, how good or bad they are. We don't do that sort of stuff. Do not do ad hominem. We're here to give information for your release and safety. And anytime anybody uses the troll or shill word, they're out. They're instant. So that is your warning. That's all I can say. It's lovely to see everybody there, though. And come on, Nim, Colin. You're such an interesting bloke. Colin, I'd love to speak to you. You're always talking about some fascinating things when in the chat room. It'd be lovely to speak to you. We've got a great little truth without debate. Yes, yes, no bullying. That's right. There is a possibility to achieve truth without debate. Debate is not necessarily the best thing. Debate is actually something that was framed by the Fabian Society in order to fool people, in order to make people feel stupid. In order it's called framing a debate when you give it certain rules so that you don't actually discuss things that could be controversial. You smell Fabian. Ah, do you? Oh, good. Bye-bye. Yes, long story. Poor Nancy. There is a way of achieving truth without argument, without debate. In fact, if there is argument, that means that there's somebody's bringing in the... domination matrix, essentially, you know. And what we're all about is not ending the domination matrix, because there's plenty of people who are doing that. We're talking about what's going to happen after the domination matrix has been disabled, you know. Disable plugin. Uninstall. There we go. I'll just put in your Skype. Where did I put that? Oh, I typed something. where's my mouse gone? Oh, that's the mouse that I need to get that there. I'm just typing my Skype address into... That's right. Into show. Into the... That's lovely. That is a decent cup of British tea, I have to say. You don't get it. You don't get good tea in America. Actually, you don't get good tea anywhere unless I make it. I make brilliant tea, I have to say. Now, ask anybody. I'll tell you why. It's because I live in a place that doesn't have fluoride. The water comes directly off the hills. It's got its unique taste. It's a bit peaty. But it's really quite nice, and it makes the best cup of Scottish tea you will taste this side of Aberdeen. Yeah. There we go. Oh, there's Nim. There we go. So, accept, and let's bring him in and see what happens. That's an interesting little gold coin. Nimble Horse, greetings.
I'll just turn my radio off.
It's because I live in a place...
Yeah, that's me. I can hear my voice in the background.
That's it done.
Right. There you go. Hello, how are you, Nim?
Yeah, that's good to speak to you.
Lovely to speak
to you. I've been listening to you for about, is it 4 years now, I think?
You know, it's incredible, actually. You know, I get messages from people now and say, I've been listening to you for 3 years. And, like, I'm looking at their email or their ID, and I've never seen this person. They never come to chat rooms. I know, you're always in the chat room, Nim, and your comments are always either humorous or informative. Excellent. It's just lovely, lovely having you around, mate.
Because sometimes the things I put in are controversial. I'm not one to upset... you know, the apple cart or anything. So thanks for saying that. Yeah, but I think my first internet radio was Dave Corso's Wolf Spirit. I used to tune into that's where I got first heard yourself, actually. And I've been tuning in ever since.
Amazing, amazing. Now, is it you have a partner still with you?
No.
All right, okay.
Single.
All right. So, yes, indeed. So, what... Well, where should we go? What would you like to... I mean, what's grinding your gears, Nim?
Well, I believe you're in my locality. I think you... Are you in Aviemore, roundabouts?
I'm away north from Aviemore. I'm in Elgin, in Avis, near Elgin.
Yeah, all right. Elgin's nice, yeah. Because I'm in Fife.
Ah, Fife. Yes, indeed.
North.
Land of the Rob Roy, isn't it?
It's the kingdom. It's called
the Kingdom of Fife. Indeed. Yeah. And who is the current king of Fife?
I think it's just an ancient term, isn't it? It just refers to it was a kind of kingdom, one of the Pictish. Seven, wasn't it?
All right, so you could be King Nim. You could, like, find the title, and there you go.
Well, and again, the Pictish people elected their kings, didn't they? So I have to be elected.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get in. We'll do a little campaign on the radio.
Yeah.
Nim for King. It would be it'd be lovely to have, like, rival domination matrices.
Mm.
You know? Something to rival the Queen.
Talk about these ancient kings, the Pictish kings, that I think they spent their entire year travelling around the country, they'd spend 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, at people's houses, or make camp or whatever. And it's like it was a different system back then. It was a much more like, well, they were right in there with the people. Living with them,
yeah, and being of a, I mean, in a way, what they did, I feel what I feel that the function of a king in this traditional sense is that they would be like a kind of shaman, peacemaker, public figure, focal point. For energies and distribution of energies, so that if people were sick, they would actually go up and touch the king and receive some of the channeled energy, because they're sitting around. What is a crown? You know, we look at these things nowadays. You go to a New Age shop and you see Lemurian headband or Atlantean headband, and it's like a piece of copper with jewels stuck on it. What's a crown? It's a piece of metal with jewels stuck on it. You know, They are to enhance the king's channeling ability. That's for channeling divine energy through them.
Yeah, I like that idea. Here's something. Talking about copper, I've got a copper torque on, you know, like a Celtic torque. I made it. I've had it on for my neck for like 20 years, and it
torque.
I actually a torque. Yeah, it's twisted copper. Maybe I think there's about 9. It's just cooker wire, you know, like. And I stripped it and twisted it together, and it's got 2 loops at each end, and it's bent round my neck in a horseshoe shape, and then I've got it tied like a couple of cotton, so I can tie it like a bow tie. So I'm always wearing this collar and tie. It's to hold up the plaid of my hood of my Celtic kilt. And that's not many people know that about the torque. They just think it was usually made in gold or silver, and the Celts back in the day, you know. And they think it was some kind of, magical or status symbol. But it was actually, it's a functional device to hold up your hood of your plaid. Yeah. But I wonder, I get verdigris tide mark around my neck if I don't have a shower, you know what I mean? But yeah, 20 years I've been wearing this torque.
Wow. You see, this is interesting. The twisted metal, it has actually magical properties. I mean, when they say, oh, it's got magical properties, they may actually be picking up on something, because nowadays I'm taking what you call cookerware, which is just to explain it to people. It's the electrical cable that is used for wiring up electric cookers, which is a very heavy, thick copper wire. It's usually about 1.5 millimeters thick. And if you take an electric drill, wind that around, and you stick the wire in the chuck, and then you create this beautiful twisted wire material that is fantastic for making things, because you know, it actually hardens the copper and makes it slightly stiffer. If you you can make sculptures out of that, and if again go back to my website everbeyondradio.com, look under products, and you'll see all these geometric devices, geometric forms. You know, when I say geometric form, that's like a star tetrahedron, or a tetrahedron, or a hexatetrahedron, or something like that. There's lots of those, all sorts of interesting things on everbeyondradio.com. So do have a look, and you'll see what we're talking about, these twisted copper things. But how would you spell, so people can look on Google Images, the name of this this little fellow that you have around your neck?
Oh, yeah, it's a T for tango, O-R-K, small c, so hang on, I'll just get a link. Torque, it's like normally the Celts round about Jesus' time in Britain, the Bronze Age, you know, it goes back to the Bronze Age. It was gold or silver, but they did use copper. They called it red gold copper. I'll see if I can just.
I found a beautiful one here, an Iron Age torque, which has got. It's
amazing.
It's continuous. Now, that's very interesting, because what that looks like, if you look at some of these things that Tesla has been working with, and that, there's a beauty. There's a beauty. In fact, actually, I made a bracelet for my girlfriend. I think it's on Every Other Radio. Let me just check. I'm just looking at my site. And it's almost exactly... that form, which is a twist. There we go. I'll just paste that into the chat room there, so people can see. There we go. You've got a talk there, and I'll just paste a picture of this thing that I made. I made it for my girlfriend. Where's it gone? Anyway, that's the one. That's the one I've seen. If you click on that page, you can get to the link. I'll post the link there, and it's fascinating actually, because it's just exactly the same as what I've been making. Yes, exactly.
And there's another interesting thing about it, where you live is it's getting a slight echo from you. Is those stone balls, you know about those Neolithic balls they've found, hundreds of them, up in Angus?
Yeah, this is another thing. These things have been found all over the world. And we wonder, why are this, you know, what are they doing laying around? So my feeling is perhaps they were something to do with purifying water. Like to restructure water, you run it over spheres.
Because just for the listener that maybe not sure about what we're talking about, is they're all roughly 60 millimeters in diameter, stone balls. And I think they found some, is it 600 to date? And what actually, they were originally stone spheres, but then as time passed, they must have been handed down as relics 1,000 years into the Iron Age. And they got carved into those Plato's solids. Have you seen them? All the different...
The Platonic solids, yes.
Yeah, they got carved into these different shapes in the Iron Age, they think. But my theory, the theory I like is that imagine a big plank of wood, oak, solid oak, about 10 foot long and about a foot thick, and you carve a channel in that oak plank, as half as deep as the ball, so it rolls down. It can roll down the channel, and another plank identical sits on top of your stone balls, and it becomes a racer, you know, like a roller
Oh, a bull race.
Yeah, so you can put heavy stones on top and move them around the countryside on this kind of wooden track that's just a ball and trough. Yeah, that was a Stonehenge. How do you think they may have constructed Stonehenge using these ball, like a ball bearing, stone ball bearing and oak beams for a track? You heard of that one? That's a, on YouTube. You'll see a guy reconstruct it.
All right. Sounds like hard work, though.
It's plausible. And if they had teams of those huge oxen that got extinct, what are they called? Aurochs. If they had teams of Auroch, they could have pulled those. No bother. Anyway, that's just, like I said, it's a theory, isn't it?
Auroch. Really, it sounds so, what's that word? Cryptozoologic, you know, like a mythical creature, an Auroch.
Yeah, a white bull. Allegedly 10 foot tall at the shoulder.
No.
And they found skulls of these beasts. They lived in the forest pre, you know, the humans hunt them out. I think they were all gone by the time the Romans arrived. Well, there was maybe one or two left. Auroch. Shall I get a link for that? You must have heard of the Auroch.
No, I haven't. I've been thinking there's some other bovine, but I've never heard of a 10-foot bovine. That sounds very difficult to get. I was sort of watching a thing the other day, and they've bred some cows that the Nazis bred some bulls that are just impossible to... They're like... You know, the Nazis created the Rottweiler. They also created this sort of really, really mean bull. bulls are pretty mean to start with. They grew it sort of uber mean, and they had to slaughter them all because they're just totally unruly and breaking everything and raping all the cows, you know, that they're not supposed to. So you got your you found your link.
No.
So
what you were just that was interesting about the Nazis, because I was going to say the Scots. You know how they have this image of a big orange beast with big, you know, cow horns. The typical Scottish picture postcard. I think Aberdeen Angus, isn't it? I always like to tell the story that these things are modern hybrids. They only came into existence in the 1820s. And the Highlanders' real cow was a black cattle, and it had no horns, and it was only about as big as a German Shepherd. And you were able to pick them up and put them on your shoulders.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, walk out of the next glen. That's the term cattle lifting. So these massive beasts that you see today, that, you know, that's our false history, really, being superimposed. Because I don't think they want to tell us that the Highlander culture was annihilated, you know, and their beast became extinct. And they had miniature sheep as well that they used to pluck instead of shearing. They just plucked the wool. And that's that they're gone, you know.
Oh, that must have made them. Did they make underpants with that?
No, they didn't need them. Yeah, they just had the woolen.
No underpants in Scotland.
There's no need for them.
Nothing is worn under the kilt, let me tell you.
It's because it rains every other day and they'll just get soaked, so.
So, being. Where are you staying? Where do you stay?
I'm in a cottage, 10 miles to the nearest civilization, Fife farmland. I'm overlook the Tay estuary.
So you've got a south-facing situation?
I'm actually north-facing, and I've got a south aspect, but it's a kind of hill, so the winter sun doesn't really show its face for more than a few hours on a winter day.
Well, I'm praying for the pole shift, let me tell you. You see, I'm on a north-facing hill myself, I think it's going to be all right, because if there's a pole shift, we'll be, like, west or east-facing, and that'll be better. Better than north. And let let the moss grow somewhere else for a change. That's what I... So, anyway, yeah, so the idea getting the sun is tricky here as well, because it's, as like you say, it's on the other side of the hill. It has to get over the top of the hill first. But how do you do for light? Is Fife cloudy, or is it like sunny a lot?
It's quite nice, actually. But yes, it's pretty much farmland, and it's some cattle, sheep, oilseed rape, huge fields of that yellow, toxic, off-gassing thing. Yeah, but no, I feel quite lucky. I was in Dundee, in a bedsit for 15 years, which was kind of like hell. And
I was just going to say that sounds depressing. You must have had a lot of introspective moments then.
I lived right next to the art college, so every 4 years you get like a new set of international students, which was actually quite, you know, nice. It was cosmopolitan, you know. I was glad to see the back of a city like Dundee. It's hard work. I mean, it's brutal concrete and that. Yeah. You'll know that yourself, living in the beautiful Highlands, you know.
Well, yeah, well, I grew up in concrete jungle itself, you know, like 1 mile from the City of London. But my dad, you see, my dad was a Canadian. He come from the countryside of Quebec. And so he had, he always had this hankering, you know. And I think I've kind of played out or lived out that hankering of his to return to the country. A bit like salmon. Salmon and Scots are very similar. Have you ever noticed how people, they go, Scots go, they travel the world, they do this, they live elsewhere, and then they come back when they're older. You ever seen that?
Something
homing. Like salmon, you know? Coming home to roost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you've got quite a knowledge about the sort of Sumerian, Babylonian kind of thing of things. Mm. Like the whole legal structure as well, don't you?
Well, just sort of like the Sumerian thing, that's the Christian identity that I've been looking into for the last couple of years, and it suggests that, you know, the British, the Celts and the Anglo-Saxons, the Germans were the lost tribes and of biblical scripture. And when you go into it and look, it does actually appear to be so. And so language studies, I find that's fascinating. The words we're using just now, English, have their root in the Hebrew, Paleo-Hebrew, and but of course, by delving into that, you also have to touch on the subject of this, the people today that are Hebrews, or claim to be Hebrews, and it
claim to be, yeah.
Yeah, well, it gets into sort of muddy water, and so, yeah, I'm just looking at that. I'm into ancestor worship, I suppose. I've always been, that's been my, you know, because I've been wearing this kilt thing for 20 years, can you believe it? 20 years in a Highland costume of my own invention. And I got the liberty to do it from the society that I live in, paid me money to drop out like that, yeah? Which has just been cut. You know, I just had my benefits money stopped and that, so I'm now my mum's carer, dodged him again. But, yeah, so I'm fascinated in anything ancient to do with the Scottish culture and other cultures. Like, I'm a big fan of Two Dogs and Barbara Three Crows and Patty Walking Turtle, because they're on the same wavelength as me, sort of thing.
There's definitely a... I don't want to say movement, because again, movements get co-opted. All of these things get co-opted too easily. But there is a underswell, let's put it that way, of people recognizing themselves as natives of their land, but also natives of this earth, which is a different thing from an earthling, you know. A different thing from being a citizen, because as I was saying before, a citizen is someone who lives in a city, and a city is essentially a corporation. It's the campus of a corporation. Here in the country, we live more according to the laws of nature, because, you know, because we haven't got such conurbation around us, we deal with the elements themselves as they express towards us. You know, we have to deal with the wind and the water and the earthquakes and the firestorms.
Firestorms?
Well, I was just trying to think of to get the elements in. What's fire? Well, firestorms. Yeah, I mean we don't have firestorms in Scotland because it's never dry enough.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but there are trees that do require a forest fire, aren't there, to open their seeds?
That's right. Yeah. Especially in Australia as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but the stories of the gum tree in Australia. I've never seen this phenomenon, but apparently, you know, you get a field of gum trees, and when the sun is hot, there's this very very light volatile eucalyptus oil that sits as a mist, and it will go up if somebody sparks something, or you know, somebody tosses a cigarette. The whole forest will just go. There'll be a firestorm there. But anyway, long story. I've never seen it, but it's something I've heard of. But look it up on
the Google. I was trying to multitask and find this great white aurach thing. It was the white bull I was telling you about. It was I've obviously got the name wrong. It begins with an A anyway. But yeah, 10 foot tall at the shoulder. And they found one of these skulls in the... just off from Newburgh, there's an island in the Tay. It's like a gravel, and they found a skull in that lot. So maybe that was a river deposit rather than a sacred thing. I don't know. They weren't sure, but yeah, they did exist. I'll dig it out for you and find it and post it later. But
sure, excellent. I mean, that sounds like a fascinating line of inquiry. You know, what are the native animals of your land that have been eliminated by what people in the East call the West, but what we here call the powers that be? Empire. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was another one of my bitches, is the milk industry. I like to tell people that cows were originally forest dwellers, right, and eating herbs and things, and the fact that they're being captured by us and put in fields and they're eating grass, that wasn't what nature intended. So they get really sort of acidic and they have problems with their bones and things, so they're pumped full of all sorts of you know, drugs to stop them from dying. And even the milk, it's not when we buy it out of the store, it's been sort of, they try and make it even throughout the year, because in the spring it's rich grass, produces rich milk, and in the winter they're eating fodder. So they try and blend it out so it's just one homogenous flavour throughout the year. So it's not natural cow's milk, not in that shape anyway, on mass production. It's, and these beasts, you know, they end up as leather boots and stuff, and it's a huge exploitative industry that I'm kind of against. And just think of it, how it was originally intended to be living close to nature in a forest, and it's stuck in a field of grass. It's kind of not normal.
Oh, that's interesting, because there are a couple of fields. I live actually on a cattle farm. They breed for meat, so you know, they basically kind of hang out here for a while they grow up. But there are a couple of fields up here that have got woods in them, and it does seem to be kind of natural. Oh, look, there they are in the forest, in bits in the wood. They seem to quite enjoy it.
Until they were domesticated by us, yeah. Well, us humans domesticated them some many thousands of years ago. Same with chickens. I believe they're Indian jungle fowl and have stumpy wings for jumping about the bushes and stuff in the jungle. But they've been living with the humans for, you know, 10,000 years, going back, and more probably.
Yeah, chickens, amazing things.
I'm a big fan on the Atlantis thing as well. That's why I listen to you, actually, getting the different... Because that's 10,000 BC. In my book, that's the end when the asteroid struck and sunk Atlantis. And the tips of the Azores, that's the mountaintops of Atlantis. It's now 10,000 feet underwater.
I'm very much aware that that's where it was. You're totally right that what we see as mountains, or what we see as islands now, were mountains then. Did you enjoy the book reading? It's still available, by the way, people. If you want to, you can go to everbeyondradio.com look in the archive section, and you'll see a section saying JP reads for you, and you can download the whole thing in a zip file. It's 14 hours. Now, it's unedited, so if I make a mistake, I kind of just start saying it again. One day I'll edit it into a book and I'll charge people for a smooth version rather than this. But it was quite a fascinating book, wasn't it, Nim?
Are we talking about Otto Mach's book?
Atlantis, the Dark Continent. I read a book.
I think I've maybe got just a couple of hours of that live. Were you doing it live one night?
I think maybe one night I did it live, yeah. But it's all downloadable from my website, from Ever Beyond Radio, for free.
Yeah, I'll go and seek that out.
And it's a great thing if you want to, you know, if you're on a long journey, you know, if you've got a 12-hour journey or something like that, you've got to sit in an airport or something, or you have to drive down to Britain, down to England or something. It's a nice thing to have there. It's pretty graphic in parts, I have to say. It's because these are real people's kind of regression experiences, and so it gets quite intense. And you can hear, you know, there are some parts where you can hear like the upset in my voice because like, oh, I'm having trouble reading this. But I found it quite a fascinating thing to read, and I'd like to feel what my experience of it was then, because I do feel that I had an experience then, because I kind of identify with a lot of the Atlantean artifact things, you know, triangles and pyramids, and as you're aware. What's the thing about Atlantis that fascinates you most? You know, what era?
The fact that there was these Cro-Magnons, which are like Caucasoid skeletons, but slightly larger, generally. So there was some kind of civilization pre 10,000 BC, and it got completely wiped by some major cosmological catastrophe. And I think we lived under a blanket of particulate matter for a couple of thousand years, and that's why we became smaller. And the pyramid is probably a relic of those times. I'm not really wanting to make any claims. I'm just, as I'm finding things out, forming things in my mind.
Oh, don't worry about that. I make claims all the time. but then, I'm not a researcher, so well, I'm not an official researcher anyway. But I'm inclined to agree.
And also, you know, the Bible study that I've been doing, they also think that as well, that Genesis 1, verse 1, like the first couple of verses in Genesis 1, it kind of explains that it was fine, and then there was some kind of catastrophe, and then each of those days that God makes the world, that's him bringing it back from the brink, as it were. So the Bible doesn't actually conflict with that idea.
Yeah, because it was saying he made the world, right? Well, what does make mean? You know, if I make a cake, it means I take ingredients and I order them and I process them.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things I'm doing, is go back to the original Hebrew definition of the Paleo-Hebrew for the Genesis, and when God does make the universe, there are two words that are used in the original, and it's one of them is create, as if you make something out of nothing, and the other word is form, as if like a potter at a wheel. So you're taking existing material and forming it. So yeah, when God makes the world, so he's creating things. Then when he comes to Adam and Eve, it's like more like he's forming them, shaping them. That's the difference, which is ignored in the English translations. Those, you know, the two words that are used for create, form.
There's a lot of ambiguity because we started out in Aramaic and then translated to Greek and then into Latin and then into English.
Yeah.
So, so things can change on the way through that process.
Political agenda, that was what the King James was all about. If I can just say that the Highlanders, you know, the culture that I'm in my study sort of thing, they were pretty much staunch Catholics, all of them pretty much. So that was part of the English were pushing for this anti-popish Catholic Protestant version, the King James. And that, you know how the Highlanders died at Culloden? That was one of their bitches. They were fighting to preserve their Gaelic translation, and they didn't want this new King James. So that was one of their fights, was because they're trying to preserve their culture, which was being, you know, encroached on day by day by the Crown and the Redcoats making roads into the Highlands and stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating because, you know, I've always wondered what the heck the Battle of Culloden was all about. Because when I was a kid, I went to a school in London, right, and we had the history. And every so often, we'd be forced to watch this horrible movie. It was all in black and white, and it was all of, like, people with dirty faces and young boys with dirty faces and all that stuff. And lots of people shouting and, but it didn't quite make sense what it was about, you know, why. Mm. Were these people up on these hills getting very muddy, you know, and killing each other? What was that all about? It's very interesting because I turn up, you know, I find myself like, what is it, the 20 miles from Culloden itself, not very far. I'm right in the midst of all these amazing historic places like Loch Ness, as you know, and Culloden and Macbeth. Cawdor is 17 miles away. Cawdor and Culloden are very close to each other, by the way. For those people who hear these words, you know, you hear in Shakespeare, he talks about Cawdor Castle and Culloden Battle that we're going to be talking about in a second. Tell us about Culloden. What the heck was going on, and what were the more esoteric aspects of that, which is what I believe you're quite interested in.
Yeah, well. For the facts are that Culloden was the last civil war in Britain, and esoteric. Can you define the esoteric for me?
Well, when I say esoteric, like there are things that are told to the public, but there are things that really go on. You know, as we have now. You know, we have. You know, we see a false flag operation, and. Those of us who are watching from the inside of it, you know, who are attempting to see it from an inside point of view, that's esoteric. Exoteric is what's presented. Exoteric, you could say exoteric is Fox, and esoteric is David Icke, if you're, you know, looking at in terms of the website content in our modern world. So when I say esoteric, I mean what was really going on in terms of the spiritual battle that was happening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm getting images of like Two Dog just now because the people that I'm trying to describe, the Highlanders, they're totally gone. They're extinct, and their culture is gone, and it wasn't really recorded either, as it was kind of truncheoned off the land, yeah, and these people were sent, kind of exiled to the colonies, which is America, and unwillingly, you know, it was like they wanted to stay, but there was no place for them, they were kind of sold out. And this is after Culloden, pretty much. They were gone by 1820, so Culloden was 1746, something like that. And they'd been a very tight-knit culture, the Highlanders. They, like I said, they spoke Gaelic. They'd originally come from Ireland some 1,200 years earlier. Scotia. The queen was a queen of Scotia from supposedly a Hebrew Israelite.
Yes, that's something to do with Jeremiah.
He was the scribe. Bruach was Jeremiah's scribe, and Jeremiah had his eyes put out, didn't he, in Babylon, before his sons were murdered in front of him. And his daughters escaped with Bruach, the secretary, and they stopped off in Egypt, friends there, and then made them their way to Spain. And lived there for about 10 to 15 years, and then they set off to try and get a place in Ireland. And they did. They won themselves a place in Ireland. But that's gone sort of roundabouts. The Scots themselves, speaking this Irish Gaelic, you couldn't get into the Highlands because it was like no roads, and you weren't invited. You know what I mean? It was like they were kept themselves to themselves, and the Lowland Scots, very much Europeans, you know, there was a lot of trade with the Netherlands, and there's a lot of Danish people living in the East Coast, like Newburgh, where I am, a lot of Danish. This is what sort of like Middle Ages, medieval we're talking about, and there was a kind of unspoken, like the Highlanders that only came down into the Lowlands if they were hungry and were trying, maybe needed to steal to live, or markets, and you know, down in the borders they would have cattle markets, but generally they were kept themselves to themselves, and they didn't want any bother, and they didn't bother anybody. They lived in their remoteness, and the Crown, the Redcoats, the modernism, the Enlightenment, I don't know what happened. It was the system as well. It was a feudal system, so the clannish sort of thing. And these people ended up getting into debts and from gambling and in France and stuff, and selling their land. So the people ended up getting sold out by their own, you know, family. Not family, but like extent. The landowner, the system, it was a very complex ancient system of land ownership, the Highlanders. But anyway, yeah, it just all spiraled out of control, and they were under attack. They had to surrender all their weapons after Culloden, and they couldn't wear their tartan woolens anymore, which they needed to survive out in that wilderness. They just moved into these tenements that they were building, what with the Industrial Revolution. So they all ended up in really miserable conditions, drunkenness and child abuse, all in these overcrowded tenements of Glasgow, Edinburgh, Dundee, and that, you know. It was, or emigrating. I think the best of them emigrated. And it got so bad in the 1850s or something, all of the good people, all of the beautiful, handsome, intelligent people had left. All that was left in Scotland was old people, or just like babies, you know. that was what they say in the history book, anyway. Totally devastated, you know. And it wasn't recorded. That's how you see my little avatar that in red. That's my trouser, my trews. It's a missing link, because it wasn't recorded. And I found a couple of references in some history books to them. It's a one-piece item of clothing. It held on. It's lost. But I found it, and I wear that, and I'm kind of like quite anti-establishment, if you understand, because of the hypocrisy, you know.
So Nim, is it a kind of dungaree-like affair?
Okay, I'll try to describe.
Yeah.
It's like a turban, right? So it's a big long strip, roughly 26 foot long, and a foot wide. And I don't know if I can explain it. It goes on like a second skin, and you have four garters, right? Two on your right up on the thigh, and one down below the knee. And it can be shorts, it can be long trousers, it can be shorts with a top. Like, it's just whatever. It can be a turban wrapped around your head. It can be rolled up into a tight little bundle, and it's a pillow. You know, it's just a straight off a loom. Yeah.
And a sleeping bag, presumably. Blanket, you know.
Well, that's the plaid. The big plaid's 15 foot by 5 foot woolen blanket that's belted around my waist. Sort of, well, that's what the word kilt means. It's a Gaelic word. Kilt means staggered or jaggy. Yeah, So
those are the, what do you call them? Pleats?
Pleats, yeah.
Or darts or pleats. So that you can, I mean, the you know, you look at a modern day kilt and it's not really like that. It's because it's all darted and gathered or with a band. But this is, I mean, is it like does it come pleated, or do you pleat it as you wrap it around your body?
It's really, really easy. You just put your belt on the ground, and you put the lower part that's going to become a little skirt over your belt. So you just lay something 20 pleats, and then lie down on top of the belt and buckle it up and stand up. And that's it. It all hangs down.
It's like getting the old jeans on. You have to lie down.
And hence the torque, because all that bit is, you've got a short mini kilt, and the long bit that hangs over the belt, that you lift that up and have a hood. And there's a couple of other things you do with a couple of big kilt pins to make big bin liner pockets. So you could, you know, collect huge amounts of pine cones and things. It's a really practical garment, actually, and it's just the way you arrange it around this belt with the two safety pin things I've made out of brass. Giant safety.
Interesting. I have a very good friend here. She lives in Glastonbury, and she's made a kind of she uses cashmere, very beautiful colours and all this stuff. But again, she makes this thing. You can wrap it around you. You can sit inside it. It's like a tube. It's one of these multi-purpose garments, and I love the idea of that, because what you got a few basic tools, and you got your cloth, and you can reform it to however is appropriate to the weather, which is, as we all know in Scotland, we have weather, don't we? Real weather,
yeah.
Proper weather.
Bitter sometimes, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been pretty mental. I mean, we had 120 mile an hour for 20 minutes the other day.
Yeah. I almost lost shed roof the other day. I had to go out in the middle of the wind and screw it down.
Oh, that's the worst. My worst one is when the sewage comes up during the middle of a storm, and I have to go outside and pump the back thing out the back. Anyway, yeah, I was going to play a tune. Let's play the tune. Honouring the Horse, Dick Darrell. Hello. And welcome back to Ever Beyond. And I have on the line here Mr. Nimblehorse from the Kingdom of Fife. Fife. You try saying that without a front tooth. Fife. Anyway, from the Kingdom of Fife, regaled in his kiltery,
sure,
by laying it on the ground. 5 feet wide, you lay it on the belt. You pleat it up so it fits on the belt. You roll on the ground and you belt yourself up. And then you kind of hook various things over, and it becomes like a kind of sash thing, doesn't it? It's a bit like a sari, but like heavy wool, isn't it? The way it's wrapped round.
Yeah, I don't wear it that way. Yeah, that's what you'll see on Highlander, the movie. I don't wear it like that because I've got trues, and they don't have trues. That's my claim to fame, is I brought trues back from the invisible world.
Trues. So trues is that what you've got in the in what you've linked here in the plus.google? Let's just have a look.
Yeah, there's some pictures.
Do you have any photos of
drawings
you?
Drawings of me.
This is you.
Photos.
Yeah.
I'm getting an echo from you.
Yes, you will. I've got my mic open. Okay, so there's your drawings, yeah?
Yeah, from about 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, the shoes are the trousers. And they're woolen. See, the good thing about woolens is when they get wet, wet woolens keep you warm, like better than cotton, wet cotton would. So that it's actually survival clothing. I've not had any bother with it. So I've got two massive pockets either side of me. And you know how a kilt has got a fringe on each end? Well, the fringe is the edge of my pocket. So you could fill up like a huge amount of pine cones into your pockets, like a bin bag, two, one either side. And it's...
Let's just explain what a bin bag is, because we're talking to Americans here, you happen to realise.
A bin bag, a large polythene sack for putting garbage in.
Garbage bag, that's right. Thank you. Anyway, so you've got mass. I mean, basically, you're talking about huge amounts of space. And they're a bit like looking at the first picture, is a bit pantaloony. So how do you make one piece of cloth into that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's so I've got it pinned. I've got, like, I don't know, a 4-inch kilt pin, what I made, two of them. And they're pinned to either end of the thing, and they also go through the belt, so it kind of revolves around that. So I could, the pockets that I've just described to you, they come up over my shoulders, and the bit that hangs down the back comes up over my head like a hood, and the torque holds the hood in place, and that's it. It's just like a big blanket that's strapped on my waist. And my trousers, I've got a secondary belt that goes around my hips to keep them on.
It's a torque, a couple of pins, and a belt that turns this cloth into these. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. You ought to do a YouTube and say, you know, demonstrating, you know, obviously you wear a pair of shorts or something underneath, but demonstrating how you would take this long piece of cloth and turn it into... fantastic wear.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about YouTubing something, but that's the problem. That they are my underpants, if you know what I mean. I can't really sort of. The nakedness, I get banned off YouTube for being naked.
To be honest, madam, there is nothing worn under the kilt. So, It's all in perfect working order. sorry, had to get that one. Old joke. But it's given old joke a home week, did you know that? I mean, you could wear a pair of pants just from discretion or modesty. You borrow a pair, see if you can steal one, go down into the lowlands and see if you can steal one from a skip. That's a fascinating thing, because, you know, clothing is a very interesting thing, and in terms of what Eddie Izzard calls clothing rights. You ever heard of his concepts of clothing rights?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's very simple, you know, that men have very narrow clothing rights. They're allowed to wear trousers, they're not allowed to wear dresses or skirts or high heels or stuff like that. But women can wear high heels and this and that, and skirts and miniskirts and dresses and trousers and suits and... You know, so what he says is women have total clothing rights and men have limited clothing rights. And what you're doing is you're striking out and saying, look, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, you just take some cloth and some pins and you make something out of that. And in terms of comfort, doesn't it get scratchy?
Not at all, because, well, there's no friction with those trousers. You know, there's no moving parts. That's what I mean. It's like a second skin. I can't really explain it to people until they, even when I'm they're standing right next to me, I'm trying to describe what it is. They don't see it until I actually do it. It's one of these things. It's not been seen. People can't make an actual mental image of it because it's a brand new, it's like brand new. So when I walk about in the street, it's cognitive dissonance all around. It's quite astounding, actually. When I first started doing this, I didn't have the trousers. I just had the kilt. So it was a miniskirt kilt running around Dundee with a big orange dog, like a Scottish deerhound, lurcher. Naked.
Orange?
You had
an orange lurcher?
Yeah, golden.
Oh, colours. A golden lurcher. All right, I see. Not that you dyed it orange.
Depends if the sun was setting or not. You know. But no, I did that. I got special benefit mental health. Although I wasn't mentally ill, that's what I got to not have to sign on and get a job for. I just got to run around Dundee dressed like a Highlander. Some days I hated it. You know, I threw away all my normal clothes. I made my own shoes. I just had this green Campbell plaid and a t-shirt, and that was it. Honestly, I was a nutcase. And I kept myself to myself, and I had an allotment up on the Law Hill. And then a few years later, I discovered trousers, and then so on. And here I am today. I'm still in the same kit. But I used to get a lot of abuse. Yeah, in the start, when it was just the naked legs, it was all this like Highlander across the street. People giving me the salute and all that, and all sorts of comments. But now I don't get any comments. People are just like dumbfounded. I think I'm not blowing my, you know, don't be big headed or anything. It's just that people can't pigeonhole me because I'm just out of this world. Yeah. Out of the ancient world, I should say. Because that's actually what I'm aiming for. I was trying to get a really authentic costume so I could make illustrations from it. So it wasn't contrived, you know. It was authentic. I was trying to get it as authentic as possible. And the only way to do that was to live in the clothes like they did, day on day.
Method acting. You're doing method art.
Well, I keep getting the thoughts of Two Dogs and Patty, because they're talking about walking the walk, your spirit walk, and I think that's what I'm trying to do. I have been trying to do for the last 20 years is sort of like a ghost dance. Like, I'm wearing my ghost shirt. I'm trying to call my ancestors back, because they were sensible, you know, whereas the people today that are Scots, they're not sensible, and they've lost common sense. And so I'm out on my own here, but I don't mind. I'm a bit of a recluse. And my name, Nimble Horse, I got given that. I found that name, and it's actually my given name. So my given name is Mark David, right? Mark David Patterson, right? And if you go back in time to the Celtic people, the Iron Age people that lived in Britain, you know, down in London, down in Kent, they spoke Brythonic Celt, and that language is split into two. You've got your P-Celtic and your Q-Celtic. So the Irish and the Scots, they speak the Q-Celtic, and your Welsh and your Cornish and your ancient Britons speak the P-Celtic, and the differences between those two languages is they're both pretty much the same, but words like, example would be Ken, K-E-N, Ken, that's your head. It's pronounced pen in the P-Celtic. So the Pennines, you know, that's the head of the nines. Or Kenmore, that's the head of the moor. That's just one example of how it's slightly pronounced the word slightly differently. So
I see. That's interesting. That's a bit like the difference between the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic way of pronunciation.
Maybe
it's because they say one group says an S and another group says a T.
Okay.
Yeah. So the word for the circumcision is a bris, they say in one group, and a Brit in the other, for instance. So, yeah, so you've got Pen and Ken.
Yeah, that's just an example. So the two languages, P-Celtic and Q-Celtic, my name, Mark David, in the P-Celtic language of those Iron Age Celts, it just so happens, right? So Mark is a male horse, and Mare is a female horse. And guess what? We're still using that word today, Mare. But that's the Celtic female horse, and Mark, yeah. Another one is Epone. Epone was the goddess of pregnant mares for these people. And then David, that's Welsh for, like, taffy, daffy. Davy, it means, like, nimble. So a river, the river Taffy, is because it's a nimble, fast-moving river. So I'm Nimble Horse. I just found that years ago, right? And then I used it as an avatar for my online persona. Yeah, my spirit name, I think.
Excellent. And it's always good to get away, because we've been studying this from this thing that is the corporate name, the straw man, and, you know, the uppercase and lowercase and all this business. So it's always, you know, when the police say, "What's your name?" JP. They say, no, "What's your name?" I say, "JP." They say, "No, what's your name?" JP. I'm known as JP. You know, it takes a while for them to get, like, used to the idea that it's not something that they're going to find on their database.
Well, that's it. I mean, you're not on their database anyway, because that would be a dead entity, wouldn't it? It would just be digits or electronic bleeps. That's not you, the man, the person. You know, not the person, but the human, the real flesh and blood.
The soul living in this flesh and blood body.
Yeah, you're not a digital bleep on their system, I don't think.
Well, sometimes I try to be. Sometimes, it's like Tron. You know, you dive into the machine and see what's going on. This is an interesting thing, you know, because the idea of the 12 tribes, and yeah, I'm pretty aware of this because, you know, here we are, right south of the Hebrides, the Hebrides. Then over the road, over the water, is Denmark. You know, came down the Danube, and
Jutland,
and all of these places do seem to have, you know, the thing. And I'm listening to Celtic radio, you know, just tune into the FM, and I just like to listen to it. I don't understand a heck of the thing they say, but it sounds like Hebrew. That's what it is. It's the sound of it. It's quite comforting, but it sounds like Hebrew.
Well, that's what they said, isn't it? That Welsh is 95% Paleo-Hebrew. It's not the same as the modern Hebrew, which is the Yiddish. And that gets into the deep water of religious, you know, dogmas and stuff with the Jews and the Judah, the tribe of... Do we want to go there? The 12 tribes?
Well, you know, it's always good to remind people that there is a much more subtle level of the whole "the Jews did it" thing. Because many people are liable to kind of leap up and down and say, "Oh, it's all the Jews, it's all the Jews." And, you know, having been brought up in that tradition, I'm thinking, well, it can't be all that bad. You know, I'm not an evil person. I don't go around hurting people. So let's have a look at this. So you study and you find out that there's the Khazarians and there's the Zionists, and these Khazarians also became the Zionists and the Nazis, Which is bizarre. So it's like, this is this like Jew on Jew kind of behavior, but no, turns out the Khazarians kind of infested the Jews. So do you have any, what's your history, you know? So there was Jerusalem, and then there was Babylon, and then there was Khazar. What is there a progression that you found on that? I don't know where your research has taken you.
Oh well, it's quite, my interpretation is quite radical, I've got to say that. And
well, we do like radical, as long as it's true, you know, it can be as radical as you like.
Well, okay, well, I'll try and explain it. And so this biblical scripture that we've got, known as the Bible, this is the kind of genealogical record of the first in the line was Adam. And it goes all the way down to Noah, and then there's a wipeout, and only Noah survives. And then there's Abraham, and he almost kills his son Isaac, doesn't he? Almost slaughters him.
He's one of the early human sacrifices, which I believe Jesus was trying to stop. That was the idea of Jesus' thing, was to stop all the human sacrifices. You're blaming other people and you're sacrificing. No, it's all about blood sacrifice. The whole bad stuff is all about blood sacrifice.
Yeah, I think it goes all the way back to Cain and Abel, actually, because this is quite far out there, but the story of Adam and Eve is so Adam and Eve are the first white men. That's the story of the Bible, in my opinion. So Eve gets seduced by Nakash, the serpent, and gets her pregnant. And she has a hyperfecundity pregnancy. So she has Adam's child, and she also has Nakash's child. And that sounds a bit outlandish, but actually my children are ectopic, you know, the boy-girl twin. They both had an egg.
Yeah, we call them fraternal twins, don't we?
Yeah, so I mean...
And they could be different fathers,
could,
as you say.
It could have happened.
Having two, like you'd need two fertilised eggs. It would be quite a confluence of circumstance, but you'd have two fertilised eggs being fertilised by different engagements, let's say.
So, it's quite common in today's world, but back then it would be quite unusual. But so Cain and Abel, Cain kills Abel, but there was a blood, there was a sacrifice, they both came of age at the same time to make a sacrifice. Abel gave his first of his flock, which would have been a lamb or a kid, and it's usually the most perfect, it's the best of your first born. He's a shepherd, wasn't he? And then his brother Abel, he was a farmer, and he just got some old beaten up turnips and an old cabbage, and that was his offering to God. And that, I think that was the first recorded sacrifice, isn't it? And that would have been because they fell from grace. The grace, I don't know, it gets complicated. It's like they had light bodies before the fall, so they went in these meat flesh suits. And this act of miscegenation, race mixing, that's what's set them on this downward spiral. And okay, that's a wild claim, but that's what the language of these ancients is. That's, in my opinion, that's what these ancient people were trying to describe with their language. And just because we've changed it into a Catholic universalist thing, that's another story. But back then, I think this is what they were trying to say, and there's this seed line that runs through the Bible. You've got Adam's seed when he has a son that looks like him called Seth, and that's when the genealogy starts. And the same with Cain. He goes off and gets a wife in the land of Nod, and his seed line is also a storyline in the Bible, neck and neck, you know, all the way up until Judgment Day. There's going to be this rift between so where were we? 12 tribes. Yeah, so Yeah, the 12 tribes started making golden calves. The 10 northern tribes split apart. They were called Israel, and Judah and Benjamin. This is 750 BC. God got sick to death of them, so he said, right, I'm divorcing you lot. 10 northern tribes, and they got captured by the Assyrians and relocated at the foot of the Caucasus Mountains, 750 BC. And they managed to escape north through that Caucasus Pass into southern Europe, and they spread across Europe in their covered wagons as the Caucasian people, the Bronze Age Celts. And meanwhile, back in Jerusalem, your Judah and Benjamin and some Levi, they got captured by the Babylonians, 650 BC. And they were finally released about 70 years later, but only 10% of them went back home, and they rebuilt the temple that had been destroyed by the Babylonians. And then, okay, this is the crucial part that's missed out, is around about 150 BC, there was a pact made by King John Hyrcanus. He made a pact with the southern Idumeans in the south and joined the two nations together. That's when Judea was born. The nation of Judea, this kind of multicultural union between these Edomites and Judahites, which was actually forbidden in scripture. The Israelites were told not to make any pacts with the Edomites, so John Hyrcanus sold out. And then next thing that happens is that you've got your line of Herods. Five King Herods come, and they're Edomites, and they're really brutal dictators. They assassinate the legitimate Sanhedrin and put in their puppets, and they take over, basically. And this is where the Babylonian spin comes to the... And that Jesus, he's born, he points out the fact that these scribes and Pharisees are false, that they're Talmudists posing as Moses, and they have him nailed to a cross for that. And Jesus tells everybody, he says, I've come not, but for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Well, that's those 10 northern tribes I told you that got relocated 750 BC. That's the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That's the message. Jesus, he's a Messiah for the line of Adam that fell all those many thousands of years ago. And the new covenant is just like the old covenant, but, well, any comments?
Without the blood sacrifice, you see. From my research, and I have to say this is not just historical lookings, but kind of using my intuition and going on various journeys, and I don't know whether they're real or not, but they seem to all tie together this thread. The thread is that if you... very early on, there was an agreement to not sacrifice each other, and that was fine by the vegetarians. But it was the meat eaters who had no problem sacrificing other creatures, including other people, and that was part of their society. So it was a very early kind of dividing of the ways of the groups of people who are trying to live together on Earth. But it's there were certain places that were supposed to be sacred, like the insides of pyramids and all these stuff, and they sullied them by sacrificing people in there. And that, I believe, is the whole idea of stopping blood sacrifice. And the idea of Jesus was to kind of put a pin in it, to ground that idea out. It's like, look, okay, sacrifice me. Look, I'm God. I've got everything in me. Sacrifice everything you've got. Like, this is all we got. Take me. But just stop it. And they just haven't. And that's the thing. You know, they keep sacrificing. And until we stop that, that's, you know, that keeps their magical energy running. It's got to stop, you know. It's got to stop right now. That's what we're here for, is to stop blood sacrifice.
I mean,
end of speech.
Yeah. I mean, what I know of Babylon, the ancient Babylon, is they had the god Moloch, which was a big effigy of some kind of like fire pit as well, and they would throw, I think it was the firstborn child, into the fire pit, and they had drummers roundabouts to drown out the screams. The god of the unwilling sacrifice, that's Moloch, I'm pretty sure. I mean, that's, how grim is that? Fire, that's quite prominent in these satanic cults, the sun worship and the fire gods. And but yeah, the Christ thing, about, I could just mention that, because you wanted to know the Khazar element, was that after Jesus was nailed to the cross by these scribes and Pharisees, these illegitimate priesthood, yeah, Jesus was coming back to end these sacrificial blood things, and also the priesthood itself, it wasn't needed, because the new covenant is that the law is written in our hearts. We don't need a priestly caste now that we've matured a bit, because it's, well, you know, Israel were a bit like a child, you know, like an unruly child. That's what Moses needed to nail them down with the Ten Commandments, and the Levite priesthood needed to be there to, you know, it's like social construct. But now, having Christ's sacrifice, it's a personal thing now between yourself and the Creator, because you've got this lens, if you like, to translate. And that is Christ as the lens, if you like. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm so much more aligned with the idea that God is not something that's separate from us, but that we find it right in the tiny, tiny part of our heart wherein lies things like compassion and empathy and wisdom and love.
Nurturing, yeah. The normal state of affairs. Should be the normal state.
Truth. Truth indeed. Because, you know, at some point truth is absolute. But the debate comes in, then there's no... when there's debate, there's always somebody who's an advocate of somebody. It seems that, you know, the whole debate is weighted in favour of the devil's advocate, isn't it?
You kind of lost me there, but will you let me just finish the story about the Khazar connection? Because
do go on.
Well, okay, just so Jesus is dead, right, and the scribes and Pharisees, they had this Talmud, right? It was an oral thing, and it was basically their, like, a running commentary on the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, and it was, can be left or right, up or down, right or wrong. They've got their opinion of it, these rabbis, so they write the Talmud, and it's a huge book. But that didn't happen until the early Middle Ages that they started writing it down. So what happened was the Romans stormed Jerusalem in 70 AD and broke up the party and took the palace to pieces and the temple, it demolished it completely. And the Jews, if you want to call them Jews, they dispersed. And some of them went up into, you know, this place that the Caucasus, remember I was just telling you about the 12 tribes leaving into over the mountain pass. Well, that was 1,000 years, almost 1,000 years earlier, and the place had changed a bit since then. So these Turks were living there, early sort of Khazars type. They were kind of Mongol, Hittite, to Turkish types. Well, and they were right bang in the middle of this political area, which was to the west of them was Christian, forming Christian, and to the south of them, east of them was Muslim. So the, as a compromise, what happened was that the king decided that Judaism would be the most beneficial state religion to kind of counter these two giants either side of it. So the land, the kingdom of Khazar adopted Judaism en masse. And so, you know, everyone was getting circumcised, and that was pretty much their foundation. I think that's around about 600 that the king did that. And they adopted this Phariseeism as their, so that's your Khazar. So, but you're thinking of the Safavids, the Sephardic Jews or the Spanish Jews. They make up a tiny percentage of world Jewry, something like 5%, 6%, and they're very much outcasts and looked down upon by the Khazar Jews in Israel, and marginalised. But if my theory is correct, they're still not the tribe of Judah. They are the Canaanite, Edomite insurgent that took over the temple and spliced the Babylonian Talmudism with the Mosaic Pentateuch. Okay. Ran over. JP, are you still there?
Yeah, yep. So they blended Babylonian Talmudism with...
Babylonism. With this, the Pentateuch, to create the Talmud. You know, it's like the perversion of the Old Testament. That is what.
All right. So what you're saying is that the all this weird stuff about, you know, thou shalt throw your enemy's babies onto the fire and, you know, all that stuff. That's the Babylonian stuff.
No. You're on a verse where they're told to kill all of these tribes roundabouts Israel.
Yeah, you know, and to me that's not pure teaching. Yeah, that's nothing to do with what Moses had anything about or anything like that. But no, it seems very brutal. It doesn't seem like this is it's the same people doing the same thing.
I can explain that one, but it's the Nephilim. Okay, you know what the Nephilim are. So hybridization, and it's like so unpolitically correct what I'm going to try and say, but I'll say it anyway because it's just a theorem, it's just an opinion.
It's all right, you're calling into my show with your opinion. People call in about all sorts of stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that particular chapter and verse that you're on about in Genesis or Exodus, it'd be Genesis, won't it? It's where the Israelites are commanded by Yahweh to go and kill all of these Canaanite tribes roundabouts and not to leave even children alive. And the animals, kill the animals, yeah. It's because all these Canaanite tribes were these horrible devil worshippers that were burning babies and having sex with animals, and allegedly. So, yeah, that's the Cain, that's the seed line that I was telling you about. That there's this, what's the word for it? Enmity between the two seed lines, Israel, God's children, and Cain, the devil's children. So basically, that's why that is that of it. And they didn't do it. The Israelites are too nice. Well, they didn't kill the children and a lot of the women, they let them go. And God said, they'll be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side. And guess what? They are. Yeah. So that's the Illuminati bankers, the Nephilim strain. You know, they survived. So I'm not trying to justify that chapter in ancient history.
So you're talking about Canaanites, right?
Well, Cain. Remember I told
Cain,
you that...
Canaan. Canaanites in that?
Yeah, it's a seed line, an unbroken seed line that starts from Cain and Abel. And it runs all the way through the Bible. There's this enmity between the two groups. It's described as God's side will crush the snake's head, and the snake will bite at our heels for until judgment day. This is the Bible meme I'm just trying to relate to you, without getting into too deep water, you know, trying to explain it. But yeah, it is a tough verse, that. But that's how I've had it explained to me, anyway.
Yeah, but just take it to the limit, boy, because we're ever beyond, you know, and we may be even able to broaden it out by adding other ideas from other traditions.
So if this storyline evolves out of careful word study. You know, it's not just like I'm making it up as I go along. So, going back to the original scripture, which is like the closest, the Dead Sea Scrolls, that's actually the oldest complete work that we have, really. And then we've got scraps of older. The thing is, these scrolls were copied meticulously, and the old ones weren't like just thrown in the garbage or used as roofing material. They were destroyed so that they couldn't be used as, you know, like recycled, and that's why none of them exist. We've just got this 300 BC, I think the Septuagint goes back to, and that's our version of the Old Testament. That's authentic, you know what I mean? The Masoretic text, that's the Jewish redacted version. That came about 1000 AD, and that's the version that the King James uses. It misses out a lot of prophecy of Christ, you know, coming. So they get deleted and stuff. But overall, the biblical scripture is authentic. Like, it's not a forgery. I mean, there are a lot of translational errors and stuff, and deliberate Catholic, you know,
propaganda.
Well, yeah, they've added a word, Gentile, and that's a Latin word that has no place in Scripture because it's not Greek and it's not Hebrew. But it's a divisive word designed to cause division. Yeah, the Jew Gentile thing, that's actually that's one of the false teachings that's been added onto the Bible. I could explain that. Basically, it's the word goyim. In goyim in the Hebrew is nations, and you can have Israelite nations and non-Israelite nations. It's just goyim. But it's been redefined by these mad rabbinical Talmudists to mean non-Jew, unfortunately. So you've got that to contend with. And then Gentile, again, it's a Latin word that's been overlaid on top of the Greek ethnos. Ethnos means the same family, race, ethnic. You know, it's like a. But it means again. It means non-Jew. So there's this mind game that's going on, unfortunately, and it just means that. Well, the true Israelites are the Anglo-Saxon, Caucasian, Germanic peoples. That seems to be the truth of it. And the Jews, unfortunately, have been. Same with the Catholics. I mean, the Catholics aren't Christian. You know that they're 95% pagan, and they just do lip service to Christ. Yeah. So there's all these people.
4.9% Satanist.
Yeah. Well, there are millions of them. And then mostly nice middle-class older ladies, you know, that like to be Catholic. It's a vibe they get from going to the Mass. It's a friend of mine that goes to Mass and stuff, and he, you know, but it's a nonsense. It's not scriptural what they do there. And obviously, as you know, they've been 1,000 years keeping people in serfdom. You weren't allowed to read the Bible. You had to get a license from the Pope to own a copy of the Bible. That's how much control they had over what verses they chose to read out, you know. So I'm just taking the whole Bible as a whole, for good or bad, what does it actually say? And what I've just tried to explain to you tonight is what I'm getting from Christian identity. If you Google that, if you Wikipedia that, we're demonized. But basically, it's old school Christianity, and you know the Ten Commandments apply. It's like the law's not been done away with. And the good news is that the snakes finally get booted out and get back to the garden, back to normal. Is what's intended, I think. That's the good news.
Well, you know, let's take it back to, because this takes us full circle, back to the Highlanders. I live here. This is the land of the Highlanders. Murray was part of the land of the Highlanders. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right. This is God's own country. This is beautiful, this place. Right? Most people who live here either work for the oil companies in Aberdeen, or they're farmers, or they're hippies. Or they make whiskey. You know, they do that sort of stuff here. But I can understand. I mean, this is... It's like a secret gift. Particularly this particular valley where I live. The valley of Elgin. Or Elgin. Because Elgin is a cherry tree, isn't it? This was a valley that's full of cherry trees. And I have a cherry tree in my garden. I'm basically in you know, you'll understand this language. I'm living in a bothy that is by a cherry tree.
It's nice. I've got them outside my front as well.
Excellent. So those are Gein trees. Those are known as Gein trees. So this is Gein Valley, Elgin. And it's a very fertile place. It's hidden away behind the mountains, as far as the rest of the world is concerned. And I personally hope they stay there for them. And I understand the Highlander kind of attitude is that, you know, just leave us alone. I want to hang out with people who are like me, and we'll trade amongst ourselves, and everything will be fine. And please go away, because you're just hassling us. To enslave us, make us do stuff for you so that you won't hassle us anymore. You know, that's extortion. And you just, away with you. What do you think? That's a general no to the Roman Empire. Or the Reptilian Empire, or the Khazarian Empire, or the Babylonian Empire, or the Sumerian Empire, or Ra. And Marduk, kiss my trousers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kiss me shoes.
I mean, the feudal system. That's what. 1,000 years of drudgery, you know, and that was like the Catholic Church were overlords to that. So any system like that keeps people downtrodden. It surely is an abomination. So.
My vision is that it's basically it'll be like I could venture to call it the new clanism, or some other way of expressing the idea of people who are related as friends, who eventually become a community, who eventually become an extended family. Who support each other and, you know, take a good thread through life and become essentially an expression of the soul of the land, living on the land and expressing the expression of that land. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, the meat bodies that we inhabit is made of the soil, the earth, the elements. So yeah, we are the land. Biological organisms. we're not separated from the land. You know what I mean? It's as a tree can't be separated from the soil.
Indeed. And, well, I mean, this is one of the things I was, again, talking about on the show earlier, or during the break to them, is that there is a spirit here. And, you know, people remark that they come here and they'll speak to various people during the day, but everybody will be saying the same thing to them. And it'll be like the same voice is speaking to them through the different people. And indeed, this seems to be what happens on All Spirit Radio on a Sunday. There is a theme, all right? Tonight, the theme is horse. We'll find out why maybe later. Perhaps this is the end of the year of the horse, isn't it? So perhaps we're coming up to the year-end review for the Chinese year of the horse. We'll see how Frank Jordan... But the previous show was... The couple had met through a horse connection, and here I am speaking to Nimble Horse, and the music I played was in honor of the horse, honoring the horse. So yeah, it's horse evening. That's it. So let's do our just sort of inner check to check the zeitgeist pulse, and see if Frank spontaneously talks about horses, or maybe I'll bring up the subject anyway.
Horsing around,
that's right. So,
it's been a pleasure.
It has been great fun, Nim. Thank you so much for calling in. Finally, 4 years, you say you've been listening, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
Bless your heart. And, yeah, let's hope that now the ice is broken, you can come in and, you know, maybe do, if you're interested, you know, do like a 20-minute slot or... maybe even make a podcast of things that you have discovered, you know, to express your research.
Yeah, we could have a chat about that after.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to do like a whole show. You just have a little a nugget, you know, Nimble's nuggets.
Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah.
Because I've got Nancy has already started.
I was just going to say, Nimble's Nuggets, good for the roses.
Indeed. Golden fertilizer. So, yes, may your roses ever be fertile. May your cherry tree grow to be magnificent and not pull up your house. This has been Ever Beyond, and we're coming up to Frank Jordan in a minute. And where is it? That's the one. Yeah, there we go. So, thank you so much, Nimble. And I'll see you all in a few minutes after the break. Good night, everybody. Cheers.
Beyond.